What's going on, everyone? This is the Fantasy Playbook Podcast. My name is Kyle Yates, and I am your host. I can be found on Twitter at KyleYNFL. I am joined today by Rich Rebar of Sharp Football Analysis. He can be found on Twitter at Lord Reeps. Rich, how are you today, my friend?
Kyle, what's going on, brother? This is my first time doing anything with you. So when you reached out, I said, oh, yeah, I've never got to do anything with Yates. So absolutely, let me jump on. So I'm happy to get a chance to chop it up.
I'm looking forward to this, man. It's been a long time coming for us to get on a podcast together. I am looking forward to this conversation here. I'll say this. It's not exactly the topic that everyone wants to hear. We're not talking sleepers. We're not talking breakouts, values, anything like that. We're talking about building the all bust team here today. We'll get into that. First, we got a question of the day that comes in from the premium Discord here. This one comes in from Sand Tiger. Question of the day for you, Rich. What's the earliest you would be comfortable selecting Michael Pittman Jr. this year? We look at that opportunity that he's got in Indianapolis with Matt Ryan, the quarterback upgrade from Carson Wentz. And then after him on the depth chart at wide receiver, it's Alec Pierce, the rookie wide receiver, Paris Campbell, who flashes a ton of talent. There is some buzz about Ashton Doolin, but Pittman's got this wide receiver core to himself, essentially. What's the earliest you would feel comfortable in taking Michael Pittman Jr. this year in your drafts?
The earliest, I would say, you know, anywhere like around wide receiver, like 8-ish, I'd be okay with it. I think when you look at when you get to like Mike Evans and Deebo Samuel, and, you know, Deebo's going to come up a little bit later on this podcast, I think that Michael Pittman's definitely in contention to go there. I would prefer to have him as my wide receiver 2 than my wide receiver 1, but really no problems with him kind of in that area. I mean, he's getting a lot larger of an upgrade at quarterback than I think people realize because of the stigma that kind of Matt Ryan has. But think about what Matt Ryan did in like one of the most suboptimal conditions playing at the Atlanta Falcons last year. I mean, from a clean pocket, his on-target rate was 82%. That was 9th in the league. Carson Wentz was 30th in the league in on-target rate. On throws under pressure, Matt Ryan was 72% on target. That was 7th in the NFL. Carson Wentz was 31st. Then you just talk about the target opportunity he has. I mean, this is a team that is going to run through Jonathan Taylor, but, you know, there could be a little bit of regression for Jonathan Taylor a little bit too. He had 60 more targets, Michael Pittman is, than the next closest teammate a year ago. There still is a big kind of chasm of question marks with what they have after him. And they've got one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. So when you look at like alpha upside, he has that. He's got the frame. He's young. He's on the age spectrum. He's going to command targets. I would have no problem being in on Michael Pittman to the degree, even where he's risen this far this offseason.
Yeah, you say he's risen so far this offseason. That's definitely the case, right? Early on in the offseason, we had Michael Pittman Jr. in consensus ranks around like wide receiver 18, 19, 20. I've got him at wide receiver 11 in my rankings for the year. So as we're talking about what's the earliest I would feel comfortable, I'm right there in lockstep with you. It's crazy. Wide receiver 8 was the number that I had in mind there too, because of the opportunity that he has in that offense. And yes, I mean, you talk about Matt Ryan, what he did last year, also just the human element of losing Calvin Ridley, you know, like that breaks up that offense, right? You are trying to piece things together when you lose someone like Calvin Ridley through the year last year. So I think looking at all that, looking at what Pittman can do this year, wide receiver 8, I think he's a locked in wide receiver 1. And yeah, I'm comfortable taking him there in that wide receiver 8 territory. Depends on your draft, of course. I get the questions like that all the time. Like, what round would you feel comfortable at all? Depends on how fast wide receivers are flying off your board, right? So I'm glad that you answered it that way as well. As we look at that territory, wide receiver 8 for you, wide receiver 8 for me as well. We got some news items here that have happened since the recording of the last podcast. Let's fly through these because we have a lot of content to get through here in building that all bust team. Mike Evans suffered a minor hamstring injury last week. I saw someone comment directly under like the tweet from Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport, the sky is blue. This is his time every single year where he suffers some sort of hamstring injury and he plays through it every single year and he is going to be just fine for your lineup. Sounds like it was a minor injury. Khalil Herbert has been getting some run with the first team offense in training camp for the Chicago Bears and is expected to see more work in 2022. We'll talk more about David Montgomery in a little bit. Matthew Stafford claims that his elbow injury that he's dealing with is just, quote, a little soreness. Any concern here for you, Rich, as we look at Matthew Stafford from a fantasy perspective, and maybe not even Matthew Stafford, but the receiving options that he has, too, if this carries over into the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole trickle down of Matthew Stafford's going to miss time. The Wolford of Wall Street is not the guy we want to be under center when we've invested into Cooper Kupp, potentially Allen Robinson. Yeah, I mean, it's you don't feel good about it. I mean, but I will say one thing about the Rams is they have one of the best medical staffs in the NFL. When you just look at the amount of, like, games missed that the Rams have had due to injuries, I mean, they've been one of the better teams in that area. So hopefully they're managing this thing well. You never feel good, though. You never want your starting quarterback to start being treated like a baseball pitcher like this early in the summer. So it's something I'm monitoring, but apparently he dealt with it last year. I'm not a doctor, so I don't really know. I'm going to try to follow as much news as I can, but I can't say I feel great about it at all.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. I did a mock draft over on YouTube, youtube.com/thefantasyplaybook, recently with some members of the Discord. And I was talking about, I had the 1-2 pick. And I was like, I'm going to use this as kind of that tiebreaker to break up Cooper Kupp or Justin Jefferson, because all three of those guys, Kupp, Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, they're all in a tier for me as those top tier guys. And this little bit of news and concern with Matthew Stafford is enough to put Justin Jefferson above Cooper Kupp, at least in that mock draft. We'll obviously keep you updated as news progresses. Kareem Hunt has requested a trade from the Cleveland Browns, or he would like to get paid. Do we see Kareem Hunt playing Cleveland this year? Is that the expectation for you, Rich?
I mean, I largely still do. It's so late in the game for them to kind of, like, for him to kind of push this button. But, you know, maybe if there's an injury and a team gets desperate. I mean, the Browns are in a situation where they should take what they could get for him if it's above, like, a comp level pick. Because at worst, they're going to get a comp pick for him next year, letting him walk. So if it's at least equal to him more than that, they should at least, like, probably explore it. You've got D'Ernest Johnson on hand. They probably, like I said, the odds of them extending Kareem Hunt, I think, are pretty low, too, to what I think Kareem Hunt's market value is. So, I mean, if they can get that offer, if a team's desperate enough, sure, I think they can explore it. I think it's kind of late in the game, but you never know. We saw Sony Michel get traded during the preseason last year for a 4th and 6th. So, yeah, I mean, I still think it's open to it. You know, if you're going to take Kareem Hunt, at least you've got the opportunity now of, like, he could run into a better situation if a team is trading for him to a better team too as well. And if also you're drafting D'Ernest Johnson right now, you know, he has a shot to now vault to being, like, number two behind Nick Chubb if that trade were to happen too. So they're both guys have a little bit of contingent value that's not really cooked into their price as well. I would put the odds low, but definitely not non-zero right now.
Right. And I think too, I was going to ask that question was, is it a sneaky move to be, if you're drafting right now, to be reaching just a little bit to get Kareem Hunt onto your roster? And his ADP is, like, running back 32 off the board right now. Like, I feel like that's at least a little bit interesting, you know, as we move and we get a little bit more news here. He did show up to practice and that hold in kind of ended here. So we'll see what happens here as we move forward. Jameis Winston left practice on Monday, but appears to have avoided a major injury, and this kind of got buried. And I was really surprised with this. Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon are expected to be on a pitch count this season. I feel like this did not get the amount of publicity that it really needed on Fantasy Football Twitter yesterday. This is coming directly from the Denver Broncos offensive coordinator. So any concern about Javonte Williams and where he is currently going in drafts? Based on Fantasy Pros' latest ADP consensus, he is at RB11 off the board.
Yeah, definitely pretty rich on the upside. I mean, the thing is, when you hear something like pitch count this time of the year, it's still so vague. There's no definition to it, right? Like, we already know Javonte Williams isn't probably going to be a guy that gets 25 touches a game inherently. Right. So, like, we already know that. With no definition, we're still, like, treading on water here. We just don't really know what the split is going to be. Because all we're really worried about Javonte Williams is the actual split. How close to 50-50 is it? If it's more 60-40, then he has kind of that upside, especially on an offense like Denver, we're expecting to take exponential steps forward, you know, with Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett this year. So it's still kind of a gray area. I mean, he's still kind of more of a boom bust, like, prospect of a pick where he goes in drafts. I mean, I feel like I want a little more insulation. But if I have an running back, like if I happen to open with Jonathan Taylor or Christian McCaffrey, you know, taking him on as your RB2 for the upside is a lot more palatable than if I open with Justin Jefferson and then I have to take him as my RB1. So there does get a little bit of nuance to where you're going to select him on your roster builds. But I mean, this is still a very undefined piece of news, even though being news,
right,
so we don't really know an answer. We still don't really have an answer to what we really want to know.
Yeah, RB11 for me, a little bit too rich. With this news, like, that's enough for me to have concern and bump him down the rankings just a little bit there, where I would be looking at guys that are going directly behind him. Alvin Kamara, like, I understand Kamara's situation where he could be suspended. That has some risk too, but the upside is 100% there. Leonard Fournette, you know, we're talking about Ezekiel Elliott at RB 15. Like, there are other guys there where I think are a little bit safer than Javonte Williams with this situation with Melvin Gordon. All right, reminder, theffplaybook.com/memberships. Get prepared for your fantasy drafts that are happening here in the next couple of weeks. We got preseason football here this week. Looking forward to it. Everything that you need to dominate your fantasy football league can be found over at theffplaybook.com/memberships. Three tiers for you to get signed up and help support the show here. Plus, get ready to ace your draft. theffplaybook.com/memberships. All right, Rich, we are going to have a little fun here today. We're going to break this up rather than just going back and forth. All right, who's your first bust here of the year? The player that you think is overrated, overpriced in drafts, whatever. We're gonna break it up here a little bit. We're gonna have some fun. We're gonna build a fantasy football lineup of the all bust team here. And we are going to turn this over to the listeners to have you guys vote on which team you believe is the best, worst. I don't know how to quantify that, which way we're going to look at that, but let's have some fun here today. So we're going to do quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, and a tight end. So we're just going to go back and forth here. We're going to fill out these positions with players that we believe are good fantasy assets. Do not hear what we're not saying. Like, these are good fantasy assets. It is all dependent on where they are going in drafts. We think they're a little bit overpriced. We have a little bit of concern here with these guys that we think you should pay attention to. So I'm going to turn this over to you. Let's start at the quarterback position. Who is the quarterback that you think is a little bit overrated going into 2022?
Yeah, right now, looking especially in general population leagues and outside of like even on Underdog, actually looking at like where he goes in those drafts, Joe Burrow for me is very much way too rich. He's a guy that he actually, you know, took off big time in year two. He led the league in completion percentage and yards per pass attempt. He's the first quarterback to do that since Drew Brees in 2017. He was the QB10 in points per game. But he also faced the third easiest schedule in the NFL. He had just three games last year, finishing above the QB8, despite a 6.5% touchdown rate and throwing for 9 yards per pass attempt. Two things that are going to be very tough to keep sticky. He had another 7 games as the QB16 or lower. That's almost half of the games he played. And, you know, we look at the explosive playmakers, the improved offensive line. There's definitely room for growth here, and I understand why he's gotten there. But you need all those to come together because they also have our hardest passing schedule of the season at Sharp Football Analysis. He has 11 opponents that were in the top 13 in passing blend, which is explosive plays and efficiency, and that's projected, not what was allowed last year. You look at his end of the season schedule too, and things are fluid. We don't want to bank a lot of things on the right end of the season schedule, but you know, weeks 14 through 18, Browns, Buccaneers, Patriots, Bills, Ravens, that has potential to be as daunting of a close to like any quarterback could have to close the season. You look at Burrow last year against top 10 pass defenses. He only faced 6 of them last year, but he threw for just 7.3 yards per pass attempt and 236 yards per game in those games, as opposed to 8.6 yards per pass attempt and 319 yards per game outside of those games. So I think Burrow, with him just not having the as much rushing of a support as a lot of these quarterbacks that he goes around in ADP, just a little bit too rich for me. I feel like I can arbitrage his production with a Derek Carr, with a Kirk Cousins, potentially even a Tua Tagovailoa. So Joe Burrow, a little bit too rich for me right now.
Hey, fantasy sports fans, are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You will have complete control over your team's future. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Do you think you can create a dynasty of champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com and get started on building your dynasty. Use the promo code PLAYBOOK for $5 off your next team. Again, that's sign up at dynastyowner.com to get started on building your dynasty today and use the promo code PLAYBOOK for $5 off of your next team. It's interesting. Joe Burrow, QB6 in Fantasy Pros' ADP consensus. And that ADP consensus over on Fantasy Pros is taken into account ESPN, Yahoo, Fantrax, Sleeper. Like, these are the leagues where, you know, the more casual fantasy managers are playing, not Underdog. And like you said, even Underdog, he's going, but that's before Jalen Hurts, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Aaron, like Matthew Stafford, Trey Lance. And that's the theme that you said there at the end, is he doesn't have the rushing upside. And that's the theme with my guy here. That's Aaron Rodgers, QB 10 in Fantasy Pros' ADP consensus currently. And that is above Matthew Stafford, Trey Lance, even into the Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr territory there. And I view Aaron Rodgers without Devontae Adams more in that Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr territory and range. I have them all right next to one another versus above guys like Matthew Stafford and Trey Lance, especially Trey Lance, like the upside that Lance can bring you. And if he does develop as a passer this year and really clicks in this system with, you know, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, George Kittle there as those receiving threats to easily take on Yak for him, Lance could break fantasy football. Aaron Rodgers with no rushing upside is not going to do that for you. He's going to have to throw for 40 plus touchdowns yet again. He's going to have to put up another MVP season to return even that, you know, QB 11. And listen, I like Aaron Rodgers for fantasy this year. I still say like he's going to throw for 35 plus passing touchdowns without Devontae Adams. Like it's going to happen. But with that receiving core, plus the fact that you have these other guys that have the safer built-in floor, Aaron Rodgers there is just a little bit too highly priced for me. I've got him at QB 13 in my rankings, QB 10 in ADP consensus. So a little bit there, starting out the all-bust team there with Aaron Rodgers at the quarterback position. All right, let's turn it over to you with the running backs. We've got two running back spots here. Let's just go one at a time. Let's go running back number one here for you. Who fills that all-bust spot there in that lineup?
Yeah, my first guy is James Conner. You know, it's unfortunate because, you know, James Conner is a guy like we perpetually want to root for, obviously. You know, it's coming off of 1,100 yards, 18 touchdowns. That was third in the league. You know, he averaged 26 points per game in the six games that he played without Chase Edmonds, five RB1 scoring weeks in that. He even averaged a career high 10.1 yards per catch. Now, with Conner, the red flags here are, one, he's yet to play a full season in the NFL. And with Edmonds out last year, we saw once again when he had that workload extended, he started to pick up wear and tear. He missed two games with ankle and heel injuries. So how stable is like just those splits that we took without Chase Edmonds going into this year? They didn't really added a lot, but I still think that there's a lot more fragility than a lot of people are expecting, you know, the workload for him to be. He's also just never racked up like a ridiculous amount of touches in his career in a season. Then you talk about just the regression factor. He scored a career high 18 touchdowns last year. He converted 36% of his red zone opportunities into touchdowns. That led all running backs to receive 20 or more of those types of opportunities. He really benefited from like just point blank range falling in the end zone. He had the most fantasy points scored from the 1 yard line. 46% of all of his red zone production came just from the 1 yard line. He led the NFL with 8 rushing touchdowns on the 1 yard line. So you're really kind of the Cardinals just getting to that sector of the field again, which is hard to roll over. And then you look at just in career when, you know, he hasn't been a touchdown scorer, he's averaged just 5.2 PPR points and 4.5 half point PPR points per game for his career. In game three, hasn't scored a touchdown. You know, the Cardinals have our 21st ranked offensive line coming into the season. They also have our 36th ranked rushing schedule. And if he just doesn't have that full-time role, if, you know, Benjamin steps up and plays a little bit at Chase Edmonds' role, if Darrell Williams does, that makes Conner more of a touchdown-dependent player, and we're already suspecting significant touchdown regression from him, which just makes him too risky, you know, paired with kind of like the injury history.
So James Conner, RB18 off the board in Fantasy Pros' ADP consensus. Do you still think that that's a little bit too high? Because I think that a lot of people will acknowledge that James Conner is touchdown-dependent. However, based on the offense that he's playing in, he's probably going to have several opportunities to score touchdowns yet again this year. As an RB2 on your lineup, there's a case to be made like that price tag is being taken into account. Do you think that that's still too high, or is it more so like you're looking at some of the other guys that are going behind him that you would prefer above James Conner?
Yeah, it really comes down to that. I think the price is more or less fine. I think that they are pricing some of the downside in, but it just comes into like when it comes time for me to pick James Conner, I always go in a different direction.
Sure.
You know, that's kind of where it is for me. You know, I just don't think that he's going to like I said, live up to kind of where the expectations kind of are. But I do think the overall price is more or less fine.
Yeah, and I think that if he was going at like RB12 off the board, RB11, like people were just completely ignoring the fact that, what did you say, 45% of his, like, you know, his touchdowns came from the 1 yard line or whatever, like his efficiency there is just ridiculous. I think if people were ignoring that fact, then I think there's definitely a case to be made like James Conner priced way, way too high. For you, this is just more of a case of this is just a personal preference, looking at some of the other guys that you can go with there that do have a little bit more consistency for your lineup. Consistency for your lineup was what Austin Eckler brought to your team last year. Austin Eckler at RB1 spot for me in the all bust team. This has everything to do with where he is being priced currently in drafts. RB2 off the board across Yahoo, RB2, Fantrax, RB2, FFC, RB4, Sleeper, RB4 off the board. Gives that that two of ADP consensus there. Eckler was fantastic last year. Like he completely redefined his role. He was the workhorse back for the Los Angeles Chargers, and that led to 20 total touchdowns for this guy last year. And he absolutely helped you win a fantasy football championship if he was on your roster. But the thing is, now as we look ahead to this year, Eckler's already talked about, like, I don't think that I'm maintaining that type of workload again this year. That usage in the red zone, it's not going to be his this year, at least to the level that it was last year. We're going to see one of these other guys finally step up. You've got Isaiah Spiller there, the fourth round rookie out of Texas A&M, who was a lot more talented than the fourth round, had athleticism concerns coming out. That's why he dropped a little bit, but Spiller can fill that Melvin Gordon light role. Or is it Joshua Kelly that finally steps up, or Larry Roundtree? I think that the Chargers are going to do everything they can to back the workload off of Eckler just a little bit, especially in the red zone. And that is what raises flags for me when I'm looking at a player at the RB2 spot off the board where I need him to continue to score touchdowns. It's not like Eckler is going to put up ridiculous yardage every single year. He's a safe option, especially in full PPR formats, but the touchdowns is what pushed him over the top last year. RB6 in my rankings. So I am not saying that Eckler is outside the top 12 running backs, not saying that he's a bad fantasy asset. This is the fact that he's going at RB2. And I think there are some other safer options that you can look at there that have a little bit more upside too, because of the changing of the role that I'm expecting there for Eckler this year. Let's turn it back over to you. RB2 in your all bust lineup. Where are we going?
I'm going with Cam Akers. I mean, Novak honestly might have a wider range of outcomes than Cam Akers. I mean, he has the potential to be like a lead running back on a potentially great offense, you know, as long as that, you know, elbow holds up that we talked about for Matthew Stafford. But, you know, on the other hand, like he could be a timeshare back and not really have the kind of any kind of like tangible workload. We did see him come back last year. He had 27 of 30 backfield touches in divisional round. It shows that the Rams do kind of believe in his talent. On the other hand, we saw in the Super Bowl when Daryl Henderson was available, it was back to being a timeshare, and Daryl Henderson played passing downs. So we just don't have a real large sample of Cam Akers like really being a functional, you know, kind of, you know, guy that we can sink our teeth into. Then when we get under the hood of his layout here, the Rams also just have not thrown the ball to running backs at all since Todd Gurley left. They're 31st and 32nd in the league in target rate to the running backs the past two seasons. So we don't have any insulation of like catching passes either. And then you look at the Rams, they were 31st in the league last year in EPA as a rushing team. Then they lost two starting offensive linemen and Andrew Whitworth and Austin Corbett. They face our 31st ranked rushing schedule. This is already a team that wasn't running the football well either. And that's what Cam Akers kind of got penalized for. I don't want to penalize him for his end of the season stretch facing good opponents. It's that the Rams weren't a good running team and he was facing good defenses. Now he's the same thing could be in place again. This is an offensive line. I think has question marks. Schedule is a problem and the pass catching is just not there, which makes Akers kind of more of the most volatile running backs I think you can select, you know, in like that opening four or five rounds.
I completely agree with you as far as Akers being volatile. Like this, you really have no idea what to expect out of the workload. And I mean, Sean McVay just came out last week and was like, we feel good with the two running backs that we have, like utilizing Daryl Henderson. Now Henderson, his durability and availability is a whole other conversation, but to offset the difficult rushing schedule and the offensive line woes there in LA, you could at least point to, okay, well, Akers is going to have ridiculous volume to offset that. Well, he's not going to. We don't know that. We don't know that for certain. So that's what makes him a little bit of a risky pick there. He could be a top five fantasy football running back because of the offense that he's in and if he gets that workload, but we don't have that guarantee. So I like that call there with Cam Akers on the all-bust team. For me, I'm going to go with David Montgomery. I hinted at this earlier. Montgomery, RB16 off the board. And I think people view the name David Montgomery and they say, well, terrible offense in Chicago, but you know what? The workload is there. Just like we talked about with Cam Akers and the potential of what he could be, we at least know that to be certain with David Montgomery that he's going to see 250 plus carries. Do we actually know that though? Like, do we actually know that? Because what we're starting to hear here a little bit, and I've been talking about this all offseason, which is saying, I think Khalil Herbert is, you know, a player that you should be drafting later on in your drafts, is this is Luke Getsy coming from Green Bay. He utilized multiple running backs last year. Matt LaFleur and him utilized AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones side by side. Herbert proved that he's talented enough to deserve to be on the field. And we're seeing Khalil Herbert get some first team reps. We're hearing rumors about a committee approach. And as we look at David Montgomery there with RB16, there are some other guys that I think have more upside there than David Montgomery. I think that people are viewing him as that solid, stable option for your lineup. I want to push back a little bit and say I don't think that that is the case this year. We got to keep moving here. Let's go to the wide receiver position. We got two spots here. Let's just go one at a time again. Who is your first wide receiver that you want to point out here?
My first guy, it hurts, but it's Debo. Debo, coming off of, the most unique season a wide receiver almost has ever had in NFL history last year, kind of a one-of-one player. But you'll get Debo Samuel. He was fifth in the NFL in receiving yards, despite being 54th in routes run and 26th in targets. His 18.2 yards per catch definitely aren't going to hold up after 14.1, 11.8 through two seasons. We're going to get recoil there. Outside of volume concerns, San Francisco was 31st in pass attempts per game last year with a non-mobile quarterback. Now we've got a mobile quarterback this year. We have to earmark just the massive kind of touchdown regression too that's in store for Debo Samuel. He had just 9 red zone targets all year. That was 79th in the league. He had just 4 targets inside the 10, just 2 in the end zone. He had 14 red zone rushing attempts, but just one of those carries came inside the 5-yard line. The team had 14 carries inside the area of the field, and that was without Trey Lance taking any. You look at Debo Samuel, ended up with 13 of his 16 touchdowns last year, including the playoffs, scored from 10 yards out or further. 54% of all NFL touchdowns are scored from inside of 10 yards.
Right.
He scored 8 touchdowns above expectation. Only Austin Eckler scored more, 9. The difference between Eckler is at least he's still projected to score a decent amount of touchdowns. Debo Samuel's projected touchdown total was 55th in the NFL. So we've got regression all over the board here. Then we have the unknown factor of just what does Trey Lance do to this offense? It could be great. It could take it to new heights. Could be worse. Could be the bottom could come out here too as well. So anytime Debo is up in that second round, I just have a real hard time, clicking him just because there's so much more of what happened that last year was just so unique. And it's hard to say like, that's all going to come back this year.
I completely agree. You say like when you're on the clock and Debo Samuel is there, I have a really hard time pressing that draft button. I do as well. I don't know where you have him ranked though, because I have him still in that territory because it's so hard to look away from the talent level. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, regression across the board, but yet he's Debo Samuel. He has the talent level and it's Kyle Shanahan scheming him open where it can easily happen yet again this year. So I have a difficult time with where I rank him versus where I actually want to draft him. Yeah. So I completely agree there with Debo Samuel. For me, I'm going to go with DK Metcalf here. And Metcalf, early on in the offseason, I think was just the price tag on him was absurd. We got Russell Wilson shipped off to Denver, and Metcalf didn't really move much in rankings. Whereas I'm looking at this, and I'm going, okay, now it's Pete Carroll. He finally is going to want to run the football, control the pace of play, and just, they're going to run the football so many times per game. It's not going to even be funny. They're not going to have a ton of overall pass attempts, even in negative game scripts there, which we expect. It's Drew Lock, it's Geno Smith, whatever the case may be. DK Metcalf now wide receiver 17 in ADP consensus. I still have him at wide receiver 23 on the year. Now, this is another situation where we talk about Debo and the talent level. It's 100% there. DK Metcalf could easily prove me wrong because of his talent level, and he could just continue to be absurdly efficient. But I have enough concerns there when we look at other players that are going around him, like DJ Moore, Mike Williams, Marquise Brown, even Brandon Cooks, like these other guys, I think have a little bit more security to them than DK Metcalf. And Metcalf is going to, I think, rise as we get more and more casual people turning back in because it's DK Metcalf. Why wouldn't you want this guy in your fantasy roster? Whereas we look at this situation in Seattle, not exactly pretty. All right, I'm going to turn it back over to you here for your second wide receiver. Where are we going?
Yeah, my second guy is Diontae Johnson. You look at the past 2 years, 313 targets, just absolutely bananas. Now, the overall girth of those targets can kind of be credited to the limitation the Pittsburgh offense kind of faced with late career Ben Roethlisberger. So there is a non-zero chance like Johnson can actually still improve in terms of target quality outside of, losing some targets. I don't think the volume will be there to that degree. But then we still have a lot of questions, though, with Mitchell Trubisky and Kenny Pickett. I mean, it could still potentially get worse. Also, if Kenny Pickett plays, wide receivers playing with rookie quarterbacks have historically seen a dip in production in the year prior. Then you factor in Mitchell Trubisky, even that. I mean, since he's entered the NFL, 6.7 yards per pass attempt, that's 37th among all quarterbacks. 64% completion rate, that's 26th among all quarterbacks, actually worse than Ben Roethlisberger in both areas. And then you look at Kenny Pickett, if he has to play, I mean, outside of what wide receivers have done historically paired with rookie quarterbacks, this is also one of the worst rookie quarterbacks we've seen get drafted in the first round. I mean, even with his massive last season at Pitt, he still closed his career 51st percentile in career completion rate, 52nd percentile in touchdown interception rate, and 29th percentile in yards per pass attempt among all quarterback prospects that entered the NFL since 2000. So I like Deontay Johnson, the player, but again, we are largely living on value to create his floor. His floor seems a lot lower. He's going just around an ADP where I just feel a lot better about the upside of a lot of the other options too around him. And I just don't feel like he can burn me if I miss on him.
So Deontay Johnson is my second wide receiver as well. It was actually funny. I saw you send over your list of names and then I went to choose mine and I was like, wide receiver, I'm looking through ADP. Oh, Debo stands out there. Deontay Johnson. Okay, great. I'll probably go with those two. Double checked your list. Was like, well, now I got to choose someone else. But I will overlap here with Deontay Johnson because I completely agree for the reasons that you mentioned. We do have the quarterback concerns. I'll add on this too. Chase Claypool, George Pickens, Calvin Austin, Najee Harris, Pat Freiermuth. Like, even if we do have Mitchell Trubisky or Kenny Pickett and they come in and they, you know, blow away our expectations, they are actually performing really well. You still have a ton of mouths to feed in that offense, which does give me some concern there about Deontay Johnson returning wide receiver 16 price tag, one spot above DK Metcalf. And I said, there are other guys that I'd prefer. We look at DJ Moore, Mike Williams, Brandon Cooks. I feel like all those other guys have a little bit more upside or security that Deontay Johnson does not. Love the talent and the player, just can't get on board here with this price tag. All right, let's wrap it up here at the tight end position here. Where are we going, Rich?
Yeah, I'm going with Dalton Schultz, whose ADP has just gone bonkers this offseason.
I'm going to disagree with this one. All right, let's go.
All right, yeah. I mean, listen, he broke out, but largely it was a byproduct of, you know, no one paid any attention to him, and then he ran hot near the end zone. I mean, he was sixth in red zone scoring despite being 11th in expected red zone points. You know, you look at last year, he completed 43% of his red zone opportunities were touchdowns. He converted 5 of 7 inside the 10, 71%. Only Travis Kelce at a higher rate last year. He only had 4 targets in the actual end zone, which is tied for 21st at the position. A guy like Cole Kmet even had more. And then you look at Schultz, I mean, his volume attached to that offense, it's very similar to me of Austin Hooper in the Atlanta Falcons. You know, he's not a guy that really does anything good on his own. We're just saying we're elevating him as a product of the targets are going to be there. He averages 10.4 yards per catch. He was 9th in expected points per game. This feels very similar to TJ Hockenson from a year ago, where we're just saying, look at the surrounding elements here, but there's no upside in the player. And historically where he's gone, the back half tight end six through tight end 12 in fantasy drafts have historically been one of the least amount of return on investments you can have in fantasy drafts. One of the highest bust rates on per ADP of any position grouping is this back end tight end group. So now Schultz can't hide, right? It's just CeeDee Lamb. The argument for him, I think, is the biggest argument against him too. I don't think he's really that good of a player. Is that, you know, there's no Amari Cooper. There's no Cedric Wilson. We're now worried about Dalton Schultz and CeeDee Lamb. So now he has to prove at a talent level that, like, he can overcome kind of defensive tension. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
So this is going to be one of the situations where we're going to have to wait and see how this plays out, right? Because you said the biggest argument for him, and that's the one that I'm going to make, is that we look at this offense and it's okay. Tony Pollard might step up as a slot receiver here in this offense, but you know, I don't see Tony Pollard getting over 120 targets on the year or whatever. Like CeeDee Lamb, I love at his current price tag. I'm drafting him everywhere I can. But then after that, it's Jalen Tolbert, who I wasn't all that impressed with coming out of South Alabama. That's an adjustment from South Alabama to the NFL. And then after that, you got James Washington out for 6 to 10 weeks. Michael Gallup not going to be ready to start the season. For me, it comes down to the ball's got to go somewhere. The ball's got to go somewhere for this offense that I can naturally see or see this defense naturally regressing from what they were last year. And, you know, they just consistently were turning the ball over with Trayvon Diggs. But if that takes a step back here this year, then we're going to see more pass attempts here for this offense. All of it goes together for me to say Dalton Schultz. I do like drafting him where he's currently going because I can't see many other tight ends getting that type of volume here. And I agree with you. I don't think Dalton Schultz is a top 5 talent at the tight end position or anything like that, but it's just a matter of the volume here for Dalton Schultz. For me at the tight end position for all bust, I'm going to go Mike Gesicki. Mike Gesicki is still being drafted as a top 12 tight end. And I really do not understand why that is the case here in this offense. And I think it could come down to, like, people are expecting Gesicki to fill the George Kittle role for Mike McDaniel here in this offense. And that's just not Gesicki's skill set. George Kittle gets onto the field because of how excellent he is as a blocker. Now, he adds onto that a ton with his receiving ability and yards after the catch, which Gesicki does have, but you need to block. If you're going to be a starting tight end for this offense, you need to block, and you need to block super well. Gesicki does not do that. So looking at, you said, the biggest bust rate in that tight end six to tight end, well, I 100% agree with that. I feel like I am consistently hyping up one of those tight ends every single year that's in that like range, and they never hit. And so I completely agree with that. Gesicki's in that territory for me. He's 108 overall in ADP consensus. Pat Freiermuth is 114. Would prefer Pat Freiermuth. Cole Kmet at 135. Even Albert Okwuegbunam at 141 overall. Irv Smith at 155. And David Njoku at 172. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you spending up at 108 overall for Mike Gesicki? Wait until the final round and draft Irv Smith or David Njoku. Take the shot with those guys who might actually hit at a better rate than the guys in the tight end 6 to 12 range. I don't see a path here for Gesicki to return value on where he's going in drafts. All right, Rich, a little bit over time here, but I do appreciate you hanging out with me here. What do you got going on over at Sharp Football Analysis? And I'm sure that a lot of people follow you already, but where can they find you and your work?
Yeah, at Lord Reeves on Twitter, at Sharp Football Analysis. All the work I've done this offseason, everything I've done pre-August, is there's no paywall on that. Everything I've done so far that summer, you can check that out. We've have shifted to more draft guide stuff and, you know, how we're approaching drafts. That's behind a paywall, but you know, yeah, the worksheet's coming just a couple weeks away. The season is here. I mean, we're gonna have games this weekend, but everyone's playing outside of the Hall of Fame game last week. You know, I already saw like Dayball's gonna play the starters in the Giants game. It's like, so we're getting a little taste, baby. We're getting a little taste. It's finally here.
We are 100% here. Finally, we actually have things to react to, which I so appreciate after long of an offseason it has been. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. TheFFPlaybook.com is the website, youtube.com/TheFantasyPlaybook. And you can find and follow the show over on Instagram and Twitter at _TheFFPlaybook. Thank you so much for watching. For Rich Rebar, I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time.